I listen and I forget. I see and I remember. I do and I understand. Let us talk about motor learning. And when you are teaching a person and you wanted the person to develop and improve their motor control, motor learning requires a lot of stimulation. This is a multi-sensory approach where you are using a person's auditory capability, their visual subsystem, their tactile subsystems. We are all using this so that we can achieve a desired response for our patient. And if we are combining these sensory input with each patient, we need to make sure that it is specific to the patient. We need to know the developmental level of the patient whom we are retraining, and we want them to be able to coordinate with us as therapists. So how they respond, it's an interaction between the therapist and it is an interaction with the patient. So you don't just give instruction and then they follow and then they can't do it. If they can't do it with your verbal instruction, you may have to manually handle the upper limb. This is a use of self where you're using therapeutic handling, because when you're doing therapeutic handling for your patients, what you're doing is you're feeling the body as it moves and you are providing that specific stimulation or support which allows the person to move. And when they're moving, then you can either support, glide, guide, resist those movements as well. So you will be using a lot of techniques as a therapist, which involves a lot of analysis. Again, I would like to emphasize, you don't learn, you don't just dish out some exercise. You can dish out exercises for those people that has the ability to follow it. But for those people that can't follow it because of a motor problem or neurological problem, then it's pointless. However they want to do the exercise, if they can't move the side that you wanted moving, they won't do it. So with motor learning, you really have to be specific and you need to adjust your techniques. So what am I saying? Your approach when you are dealing with somebody who's got aphasia would be different from those that has a hand injury. Those that has orthopedic problems will be different as compared to those who's had spinal cord injury or head injury. Similarly, your approach with a child is going to be very different when you're dealing with somebody who is an adult as well. So you would be using different systems and sensory systems when you're trying to make an impose change on the person. So what are some of the systems? The auditory system. So with auditory systems, you'd be using sound, auditory, through the ears, and you'd be using verbal commands. When you're giving verbal commands, it should be, here you go, remember this, it should be brief and clear, okay? Not a lot of highfalutin words, not a lot of wordy instructions, not a lot of philosophical instructions. You either move or you don't. You bend or you straighten. Yeah. Push or pull. Relax. Hold. Contract. Grasp. Reach. Bend. You know, very simple. Simple action words. That's what you need to do. What's important as well when you're using the auditory subsystem is that you need to time your command so that it does not come in too early or it doesn't come in too late in relation to the motor act. So when you're bending the hand, I'm moving the hand, ready. When I say go, I want you to don't let it fall or pull it ready, and I'm gonna let go. Now pull. That's it. So bang on the actual movement. Okay. So that's where you have to time it. Your tone, the tone of your voice, will have an influence on the quality of the response. So there's been some study that's been done actually that would say that the tones of moderate intensity, they evoke the gamma motor neuron activity, and the louder tones can actually stimulate the alpha motor neuron activity. And it's a phenomenon, and it is a, they would name it differently, but it's the same principles. If you want to facilitate, make it louder. If you want a person to calm down, do it slowly. If you're facilitating movement, go. That's it. You have to be very energetic. So the tone of your voice has an impact. And if you want to relax and stimulate or inhibit, you gotta speak slowly and gently. Okay? So when you have sharp commands, it stimulates a stress situation to the person. And you can actually use this when there is a maximal stimulation of motor response. If you want to maximize the stimulation of the motor response. And like I said, you know, a soft tone voice, you can use this to offer reassurance, to encourage smooth movement. And if there is pain, so you can do that, there is a calming nature to these things. When a patient is giving the best effort, if they're doing well, then yeah, just do standard tone. Yeah. Again, this is a use of self, use of your auditory feedback. Another effect of the auditory feedback on movement, it was reviewed by Bersma and Loomis, and they used the verbal mediation strategy. Yeah. So this is what they call it, a verbal mediation strategy, and they use it to teach wheelchair safety before transferring out of the chair to patients with right CVA. And they taught patients to say loud steps required to leave the wheelchair safely and independently. And what they found is they found that only patients who used verbal mediation learned the wheelchair drill sufficiently to perform safe and independent transfers. And these patients also had a better retention of the sequence of steps, suggesting that the verbal mediation was beneficial in reaching the independence with better sequencing. Okay, I'm gonna step, I'm gonna lean and stand. I am leaning forward and stand. So they named it verbal mediation. It's good. Again, you can label your interventions. You have to define it, what that technique is. Others would call it best-selling initiative, but what else are these techniques if you don't label them? Okay, it's easy with pharmacology. There's always an intervention in there. If you're going to do some procedural techniques, then yes, but there is always a label. So you have to label it so that when you label it, at least you can replicate it. At least you know what it is. Okay, so it's not just best-selling or BS. It is something that can be useful. Okay, that's auditory system. Next thing is the visual system. The visual stimuli assists in the initiation and the coordination of movement. Visual input should be monitored to ensure that the patient is tracking in the direction of movement. For example, if the therapist's position is important, because the patient often uses therapist's movement or position as a visual cue. If the desired direction is movement forward, then the therapist should be positioned diagonally and in front of the patient. So you're there. You are the cue. You don't go at the back and it's like you're going to move forward. If you want the patient to move forward, stay in front. Now, this will be an argument because it's an argument of moving and handling principle, but you're a therapist. So you should be skillful and be very mindful of the responses of your patients. Okay. So in addition to the therapist's position, placement of the OT activity should also be considered. If your goal is to increase the head, neck, and trunk rotation to the left, then the activity should be placed in front and to the left of the patient. Now, because OT intervention is always and should always be activity orientated, there should be an abundance of visual stimuli for the patient. So that's one unique thing for us. Again, our interventions should be activity-based, the enabling phase of rehabilitation. And when we're doing that, it just meant that there is a lot of opportunity for us to provide visual stimulation and visual prompts to the patient. Another system that we want to talk about would be the tactile system. And these tactile system, if you want to look at the development and improvement of a child, for example, the tactile system matures first before the auditory and the visual subsystem. These will be the first ones a child gets to master first. Why is that? You know, look at the child, look at the baby. After it was born, all that tactile subsystem is already provided. So they will define themselves. The body will define itself through the borders of the skin. That is through the touch of the parents, of those people that look after them. After the tactile subsystem, then there will be the vestibular subsystem and the proprioceptive subsystem. These are the ones that mature first. And it makes the tactile subsystem much more efficient. The tactile subsystem is much more efficient as compared to the visual and the auditory subsystem. And why is that? This is because the tactile system has a temporal and spatial discrimination abilities as compared to the visual system, which can only take spatial discriminations, and the auditory subsystem, which can only make like temporal discriminations. That's why Affolter states that during the development, the processing of tactile kinesthetic information can be considered as fundamental for building that cognitive and emotional experience. Looking at and then listening to the world does not result in change. However, the world cannot be changed or cannot be touched without some change taking place. Do you get it? Right? You can look at the world, but you can't change it. But if you touch it, you can change it, right? There's actually a Chinese proverb that often cited on the PNF trainings with regard to this view for point of view, and this is that I listen and I forget, I see and I remember, I do and I understand. Okay, so that's how important it is. It is very important for our patients to feel the movement patterns that are coordinated and balanced. So when you move them, you need to remind the patient you're standing. Say you're getting them to stand, okay? And they're upright. You get them to close their eyes. Now feel this, just remember this. Feel every joint, okay? So with PNF approach, the tactile input is actually supplied through the therapist's manual contact to guide and to reinforce the desired response. This approach may involve gently touching the patient. So if you just, you know, you want to stimulate it, or you just gently touch the patient, or just a slight nudge, or you can provide it with the resistance. The type and the extent of manual contact then will depend on the patient's clinical status, which is determined through your evaluation as an occupational therapist. For example, if you want to use stretch, or if you want to do resistance, it just depends on the state of the body as well. That's what I said to you earlier on. If you give instruction to the person, you touch the person, you provide that therapeutic handling, and your hand then becomes a tool. You become a tool, and I call it the therapeutic handling, and it's not just me, it's there. All the documents are out there. These are all therapeutic contacts because we can stimulate, we can guide onto the person's direction and what we wanted them to do. So furthermore, some of the examples, so it's not just neuro. Say you want somebody to improve, in critical care, and you want them to sit down. So yes, you guide the movement, that's very good. The first movement out of bed is a stimulation of their vestibular subsystem. So you get them sitting up, their head is really down, or the neck control is very bad, because sometimes we have not done that preliminary activity in stimulating the neck and the head. We did not do that when before we sit up. And these are some of the adjunctive activities that needed to happen. And when they're sitting down on the edge of the bed, they're a bit slouched. So you need to provide that tactile stimulation on the back so that it will extend. Yeah. You may need to push the person against the direction where you want them to move. If you want them to move on the left side, push them on their left side, so then make that resistance and it strengthens. So you're stimulating all of these proprioceptive and vestibular subsystems. To increase the speed and accuracy in motor performance, then the patient needs the opportunity to practice. And again, they need repetition. And when you repeat, habit patterns will take place, and then automatically the movement will recover. So again, coordination happens, movement happens only when you practice, not just you, when the person practice. So with PNF, there are some concepts, and some of the terms in PNF would be part task practice or whole task practice. These are some of the words that they are using. Okay. In other words, to learn the entire task, we should put emphasis on the parts of the task. So little by little, you break down the task. And once you've broken down the task, then you practice those little steps. Yeah, there's this even term called stepwise procedure. This is descriptive of the emphasis on the part of the task during performance of the whole. Okay, so there you go. So there are varying parts on the motor learning, and basically it involves education and using all the systems properly. Thank you for listening, guys. Until next time, bye.
If you enjoyed this podcast, talk to your friends and colleagues about it. Like it, subscribe, share, and do what you can to appease whatever algorithm that is at play. Just remember, guys, anything you do matters and has an outcome. Until next time, bye.